Today, I'm very, very excited to share a beautiful Torah with you. And this is something that I discovered a number of years ago. And every time I learn it, I get excited about it. I think it's mamash fascinating. I hope you will think so as well. This is a piece from the Bnei Yisaskar. The Bnei Yisaskar is a Hasidic Rebbe. And this is not what I anticipated in my first step into learning Hasidut, my first step in learning Torah with a Hasidic Rebbe. But this is the Bnei Yisaskar. This is what he says about Shabbos HaGadol, about this week. And I was much blown away. I was running on the Beis Medrash just trying to get people to read this, trying to tell people about it. And now I have a chance to share with my friends. And so the question at hand is plain and simple. What in the world is going on this Shabbos? Why is this Shabbos called Shabbos HaGadol, Shabbat HaGadol? What makes this Shabbos so great, so special that we call it the greatest, the big Shabbos? And so, it takes, on a basic level, is to look at the pasuk in Shmos on Yud Beis Chaf Aleph, 12:21, and Yud Beis Chaf Aleph says that Am Yisrael should take a sheep and take the sheep and tie it to your bedpost for 4 days, and in that way you're going to indicate to the Egyptians that you're planning on killing the God that they hold so dear, that they hold so special. And so, you know what? I think I'm actually just going to share this with everybody. If you look at the Torah, and this is the Torah, although pretty much anyone who comments on it, the Torah is more or less quoting the Gemara Masechta Shabbos and Tosfos and the Beis Yosef, and the Torah explains that the Shabbos before Pesach, Shabbos Nei Pesach, Koronos on Shabbos HaGadol. Why do you call it Shabbos HaGadol? Why do you call it the Great Shabbos? Not just because you're not allowed to have matzo balls as per our cartoon, but because this Shabbos was a miraculous Shabbos. Shana'aseh Bones Gadol, Shepesach Mitzrayim. That Pesach Mitzrayim took place, and Am Yisrael Michulku, they took the sheep. And so, according to the pasuk, that Am Yisrael are all going to take sheep, the Egyptian god, and they're going to finally bring it as an offering. And they're going to tell the Egyptians, "I'm bringing your god as an offering." And in that one, that particular year, 4 days prior to leaving Egypt, on the 10th of the month, that 10th of the month was a Shabbos, like we see in Seder Olam. And so if that year was a Shabbos, then naturally, when we refer to it, we should call it Shabbat HaGadol, because it happened on Shabbos, and that was a great Shabbos, right? That makes sense. Well, if we think about it, it doesn't really make sense. It doesn't really track. Okay, it was a big Shabbos because the Jewish people really rebelled. The Jewish people, despite the Egyptians, took their gods, tied them up, and said, "I'm going to offer them your god to my god. I'm going to offer them to a Kodesh Baruch Hu." But the Torah just says, "Be'al shem oso anes koron oso Shabbos HaGadol." Seemingly, it was miraculous that the Egyptians didn't attack the Jewish people. Now, let me ask you a question: was it so impressive for the Egyptians not to attack the Jewish people after an entire year of Makos? There have been 9 Makos already, 9 plagues where the Egyptians got hit left and right, back and forth. It was very clear that you do not mess with the Jewish people, and so all of a sudden now, we're going to say, "Oh, it's so miraculous, so incredible that the Egyptians didn't fight back." What do you mean? What's so great about this? This doesn't seem to be such an impressive trick. And so the question that we're going to try and explore, the question we're going to try and understand today, is what in the world made this Shabbos so gadol, so special, so incredible? And in order to do that, we're going to have to think even further back than Yetzias Mitzrayim, further back. Back then in our time in Egypt, we're going to look at back to our avos, back to our forefathers and our foremothers. Seemingly it should be foreparents, but every time I try to write foreparents on Microsoft Word, I get one of those little squigglies. So foreparents, despite Microsoft Word. And our foreparents, they were righteous people, they were connected to God. And so maybe you've asked, maybe you've wondered, did Avraham and Sarah keep Shabbos? Did Avraham and Sarah keep Pesach? Well, how can they keep Pesach if Pesach didn't happen yet? And this is something that the Gemara Masechta Yuma discusses also. Did our forefathers keep the Torah? And to that, the Gemara says that Avraham kept the Torah. Avraham, and we say, no, Avraham, maybe he kept 7 mitzvot. He kept the 7 mitzvot, but in Noach, you know, the seven Noahide laws. And you said, no, well, he didn't just keep the seven Noahide laws, because we know that Avraham had a bris milah. So that's at least eight. So it was 7 plus 1. And then the Gemara says, well, maybe it wasn't just 7 plus 1. Maybe they didn't just keep you know, the bare minimum, the Shev Mitzvos B'nei Noach, but in fact, they kept more than that. And so I guess I will share again. And next page, that the Gemara Sefer Yoma says that Avraham not only kept the Shev Mitzvos B'nei Noach, not only kept Mila, but even kept Erev Tavshilin. And what is the implication of saying that, you know, Avraham Avinu kept Erev Tavshilin? That he kept the entire Torah, he kept everything, to the extent that he even observed the mitzvah of Erev Tavshilin, a rabbinic commandment, a rabbinic enactment, a gether, if you will, that we're actually going to need this upcoming week, or next week for Pesach. But he even kept Erev Tavshilin, implying that Avraham kept the entire Torah as we have it today. And that if Avraham Avinu were to walk into our shuls, he would fit right in. He would know exactly what to do. He could be a Jew in the year 5780, just like he was a Jew in the year 2300 something. And so that's the case, that our forefathers kept the Torah. Then there are some interesting implications based on that. And I'll just point out that the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah talks about how Yosef kept the Torah. So it wasn't just Avraham and Sarah. It was seemingly all of our Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, even down to Yosef. And so wonderful that Yosef kept the Torah. Wonderful that Avraham Avinu kept the Torah. But there's just like one little foil here, one little issue that we've got to confront. Putting aside the fact of, you know, how do they know what's in the Torah? How do they know what's in the Torah? Plain and simply, and we're not going to elaborate on this further. The Torah is not a written text. The Torah doesn't exist in an Aron Kodesh. It doesn't exist in a scroll with cloth on. It doesn't exist in the books that we find. The Torah is a manifestation of the will of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And so if someone is so connected to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, to God, then they could parse out. They could figure out what the Torah means, what the Torah looks like. And so to say, you know, how could Avraham Avinu possibly appreciate or understand that rabbis generations from now are going to want this thing called Erev Tavshilin to exist? We'll put that aside for another time. It's a worthwhile question, but maybe not right now. Right now, we're going to try and understand if Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah. He's got one problem, because if Avraham Avinu is keeping the Torah, then does that mean that he's Jewish? Was Avraham the first Jew? Well, who was the first Jew? It was the first Jew Moshe Rabbeinu, maybe, because he was at Har Sinai. What was the first Jew, maybe Judah, because Jews are named after Yehuda, Yehudim, Judaism, probably not Judah. Was it Yaakov, you know, B'nai Yisrael, you know, it, the first, so maybe it was Reuben, it was B'nai Yisrael, the first Ben, the first child of Israel. But was Avraham Avinu the first Jew? What does it mean to be a Jew? Well, maybe let's not use the term Jew. Let's use the term Ben Torah, and, you know, someone who is involved, subject to, and living a life committed to a Torah. So if that's the case, then seemingly Avraham was a Ben Torah. Avraham kept the Torah. Gevaldik, he's a Ben Torah. But the question you have to ask is, who says that you get to decide that you're going to keep the Torah? Could someone today decide, oh, I'm going to be a Ben Torah. I'm not Jewish, but I want to be Jewish. I don't want to just be Jewish. I want to be a Ben Torah. I'm going to keep the entire Torah. Is that good enough? No, the person has to convert. There's got to be a little snipping going on. There's going to be a little bit of swimming going on. And in order for this non-Jew to become Jewish, there's a whole process that has to take place. So if that's the case, then maybe Avraham wasn't Jewish. Maybe when we talk about Avraham, he was what we call a Ben Noach. He was a non-Jew. And so if Avraham's not a Jew, if Avraham is somebody else, this sort of non-Jew who's still keeping the Torah, then there's pretty serious ramifications there. Why? Well, we'll explore in a moment. But first, I'd like to introduce you to someone very special to me, to the B'nai Yisachar, Rav Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov. And we've obviously never met. He passed away a long time ago. He was born in 1783. But Rav Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov, the B'nai Yisachar, the famed Hasidic Rebbe, was sort of my first exploration into Hasidut. And since then, thank God, I've explored much more. And If not for him, I don't know that I would have had the same appreciation. So thank you, Tzvi Eli Melech Dinov. Thank you, B'nai Saskar. And let's first understand who the B'nai Saskar was. He was born in Galicia. His claim to fame was that he was the nephew of Rav Eli Melech of Lizhansk, the third Hasidic Rebbe. And he was a student of the Chozim Lublin, of the seer of Lublin, a great Hasidic rabbi and leader, and also my wife's ancestor. So that's very exciting. And I think what we're going to see a little bit tonight is that B'nai Saskar, or Tzvi Eli Melech of Dinov, was not just a storyteller. He wasn't just a source of inspiration for his people. He wasn't just what you might sort of might colloquially think of as a Hasidic Rebbe. He was also, and this is what we're going to point out, he was also a master of halacha. And so Tzvi Eli Melech of Dinov was a master of halacha, as well as a master of Jewish thought. Okay. We're not going to worry about it. And so the B'nai Saskar, as we'll see in our source page explains as follows. He says, I don't have an English translation for this, but we'll walk through it. He says in source 4, Yadua, Asher Chacham HaRishonim Darshi B'Chakru Lotzi Halakha L'Amito Binyan Ha'avos Miyamos Avraham Shekaimu HaTorah. And there has been a lot of discussion amongst our rabbis about whether our avos kept the Torah, didn't keep the Torah from the time of Avraham. And you know, if they are keeping the Torah, does that mean that they're no longer B'nai Noach? Im yatzu michlal B'nai Noach, Bein Lahakir Bein Lahakme. Maybe they're B'nai Noach just, you know, from, in a stringent sense, but not in a leading sense, or vice versa. Oh, Nemar Lav, Kol Kibinayu, Latzeis michlal B'nai Noach, B'dvarim Sheyeshna, B'chumra, Etzel B'nai Noach, Yos Misrael, Ad Chinisna Torah, Niskach Alach Lahakel, B'davar L'makabli Torah. Maybe they're not. They're B'nai Noach. And you don't get to stop being a Ben Noach. And so anytime there was a stringency that exists by a Ben Noach, by a non-Jew, and not by a Jew, not by someone who is a subject to the Torah laws, maybe they have to follow the Ben Noach, the non-Jewish approach. And this sort of stuck around. This was a machlokas that existed even into the 11, 12, 13, 1400s. And so if it was a debate back then seemingly it was a debate for our ancestors as well, for our forefathers as well. And so with that in mind, we're going to, you know, go a little bit later than Avraham Avinu. We're going to explore something about Yosef. Because Yosef at Tzadik, we know he kept the entire Torah, but was Yosef, you know, this Jewish personality? Was he something else? Was he something different? And so, okay. For Yosef at Tzadik, we know that, you know, as tremendous as he was, he and his brothers didn't really get along. Apologies to the great Yosef. He was a little bit of a tattletale. The pasuk in Bereishis, 37:7-2, Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Beis, says that, you know, this is Yosef. Yosef was a son of Yaakov, and he didn't get along with his brothers. He brought Dibat Tamra. He brought basically Lashon Hara. He was a tattletale. Now, he told his father the negative things that his brothers were doing. And so they didn't like him very much, understandably. And so, how in the world is it possible that Yosef is spreading Lashon Hara about his brothers? Admittedly, fine, okay. Okay, you know, he's being a tattletale, and maybe that's okay, maybe it's not okay. But what could he possibly have to say? What were Yosef's brothers doing that was so bad that there was any possibility of speaking Lashon Hara? And so Rashi explains on the bottom of page 3, he says, Estiba Tamra, Kol Ra Shahaya Roa Be'achav Abnei Leah, Hay Magid La'aviv. Anytime he saw his brothers doing something wrong, he'd tell his father. And Rashi mentions 3 things. We're only going to focus on one of them. What was the one thing that they were doing that was so terrible? Shahayu ochlin evir menachai. That they were eating evir menachai. They were eating a limb off of a live animal. Now that's serious stuff. Even if they're not Jewish, even if they're B'nai Noach, you're not allowed to eat a limb off of a live animal. That's a big no-no. It's not allowed. And yet, they seemingly were doing it. Yosef is telling his father, that they were eating limbs off of live animals. They were eating Iver Menachai. And so while understandable the brothers didn't really seem to like Yosef very much, he seems to be totally in the right. They're doing something very inappropriate. They're eating Iver Menachai. So what was really going on? Here the Bnei Yisachar helps us out. And it's not just the Bnei Yisachar, but he's really quoting the Parshas Drachim, which is the Mishnah Lamelech, the Magen Mishnah, quoting one of the commentaries on the Rambam. And he explains that what's really going on, that when you're Jewish, there are many things that you don't do. There are stringencies that apply to you. But in addition to stringencies that apply to you, there are also stringencies that apply to non-Jews. And there are certain things that non-Jews can't do that Jews actually can do. And so we're going to bring up one such distinction. And this is in Source 6, in the Bnei Yisachar, where he says, Shadavar hazeh hay machlokas kadma ben Yosef uvein echav shifte yishurin, masha hotzi es dibatam. What was going on? What was this sort of fight that existed between Yosef and his brothers? Why was he speaking negatively about them? Because of Iver Menachai. But why did they think that it was okay to eat Iver Menachai? Because the brothers said, we are Bnei Noach. Sorry. Yosef said, we're Bnei Noach. We have not received the Torah yet. There's not been a Har Sinai. We cannot assume the position of Bnei Torah. And yet the brothers were saying, no, what are you talking about? We're Bnei Torah. We came to Torah. What more do you want from us? There was no opportunity. There was no Har Sinai that took place yet. And so because Har Sinai has not yet happened, anybody who wants to keep the Torah has the opportunity, has the Rishus, can keep the Torah. And so we're Bnei Torah. And so if we're Bnei Torah, then actually there's a little bit of a leniency. Because for Jews, for Bnei Torah, there's a slight leniency when it comes to eating animals that doesn't exist for non-Jews. What's the example? What's the case? That for non-Jews, there's no need for shechita. You don't have to shech the animal. As long as the animal is dead, you can eat it. Gezunt hay, go for it, enjoy. But for Jews, you have to shech the animal. You've got to do a ritual slaughter on the neck. And it's a whole elaborate procedure with a very sharp knife. Fine. But for Jews, if you shecht an animal and the legs are still kicking, the language we use is mifracheset, if it's still kicking, that's not a problem. It's okay, because you shechted the animal, you're done, you're clear. But for a non-Jew, for someone who's not Jewish, for Bnei Noach, you got to wait until the animal is entirely still. Well, and the logic behind it makes sense. For the Jew, once you shechted the animal, you're good, you're done, you've done what you need to do, we're not worried about it. But for a non-Jew, if you're not allowed to eat Iver Menachai, if you're not allowed to eat limb off of a moving animal, and there's no way to be sure the animal's dead if you didn't shecht it conventionally, there was no ritual slaughter, you just killed it with a club or with a bullet, with an arrow, who knows, then you got to make sure the animal is still totally lifeless, not kicking about at all whatsoever. And so actually for a Ben Torah, for a Jew, it's a little bit more lenient, a little bit more laid back. And so the Shvatim, Yosef's brothers, said, we're Bnei Torah. And for Bnei Torah, as long as the animal has been shechted, then it can be kicking and it's not a problem. We can still eat it. But for Yosef, for a Ben Noach, someone who holds that they're all Bnei Noach, they're all not Jewish, they can't eat it until the animal's done kicking, until the animal is totally lifeless, totally still. And so Yosef, seeing his brothers doing this, and says, oh my gosh, they're eating Iver Menachai. And the brothers are saying, this isn't Iver Menachai. There's no problem. We're Jews. We're Bnei Torah. So Yosef is going and telling his father, Abba, they're eating Iver Menachai. And seemingly Rashi is telling us, they're not eating Iver Menachai. Noshe is saying, Abba, my brothers think that they're Bnei Torah when we're not Bnei Torah. We're actually Bnei Noach. You got to tell them that they're wrong. And thus is the machlokas between Yosef and his brothers, the debate, the argument between the two of them, between the group of them, that the brothers were of the opinion that they were Bnei Torah, and Yosef felt that he was a Ben Noach, that they were Bnei Noach. And so something interesting sort of happens then, a significant distinction, because we pointed out, this whole little kicking animal thing, we're talking a matter of moments, maybe a minute, maybe two. I don't have that much experience, thankfully, with these kind of things. But if the animal's kicking or not kicking, the animal has to be dead no matter what. But there is a big distinction that exists between a Ben Torah and a Ben Noach. And that we see in the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin. So in Sanhedrin, the Gemara tells us, over kokavim sheshavas chayv misa, that if a non-Jew keeps Shabbos, a chayv misa. And based on a pasuk, yom v'layla lo yishbosu, that they are supposed to rest, that they're not supposed to rest on Shabbos the same way that Jews are supposed to. So with that in mind, with that appreciation, that Jews can keep Shabbos and goyim can't keep Shabbos, we got a little bit of a problem. Because as far as Yosef's concerned, they're not allowed to keep Shabbos. But as far as the brothers are concerned, they're of course allowed to keep Shabbos. They're B'nai Torah. And now we run into a real issue. Because we know that goyim aren't allowed to keep Shabbos. And so in order for a non-Jew to sort of live a Shabbos dick life, a Shabbos dick day, they have to break Shabbos in some way, shape, or form. This actually comes up with potential converts. Any non-Jewish person who wants to become Jewish is going to practice keeping Shabbos, they'll practice keeping kosher, they'll practice doing all the conventional Jewish things. There are a few things they can't do. One such thing is keeping Shabbos. A non-Jew is not allowed to keep Shabbos. And so I have a friend named Nolan Edmondson. At 18 years old, he converted to Judaism. Very, very impressive young man. In many, many ways, one of which is that he decided he wanted to be Jewish at an early stage. And Nolan was staying with us for Shabbos, but this wasn't like a conventional Nolan staying with us for Shabbos. This was a boy Shabbos. So naturally all the food was brown, because that's what boys do on Shabboses. It was cholent and kugel, it was brown foods. And there were no women around. And so we were managing just fine, we were okay. But we forgot to take ice out of the freezer before Shabbos. And it was a new freezer, and so we didn't really know how to navigate it. The light was going to turn on. And so we said, Nebuch, no ice on Shabbos. But Nolan's staying with us, and Nolan at the time was not yet converted. Nolan was a non-Jew, and so Nolan's sitting at the table and says, how come we don't have any ice? I was like, well, we forgot to get it, and it's in the freezer, the light's going to turn on. So Nolan's like, oh, don't worry, I got it. So Nolan's going to open up the door, and I'm like, Nolan, you can't do it. You're gonna turn the light on. You're going to break Shabbos. And Nolan's like, actually, I can. He wasn't Jewish at the time, and actually he needed to break Shabbos in some way, shape, or form, so we were actually helping him. Lucky us. There's also a joke that I have to tell, because if you don't tell this joke here, you're missing out tremendously. That they're two friends, and they've been friends for years. They've been learning together. They're chavrusos. The best friends are the friends who learn Torah together. And so we'll say one's name is Daniel, and the other one's name is Steve. So Daniel's talking to Steve, and they've been learning together for so long that Daniel's marrying off his daughter, and he says to Steve, Steve, you're my dear chavrusa, my dear friend. I'd like to honor you with being a witness at the wedding. I want you to be one of the Edim. And Steve says, that's such a beautiful honor. I appreciate it so much, but I can't accept. And Daniel's like, oh, yeah, we got some time. I'll convince you later. And so a few weeks go by, the wedding's getting closer, and he says, Steve, please, 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 be a witness at my daughter's wedding. And Steve says, I can't do it. I can't do it. Daniel says, why? He's like, I can't explain. I can't do it. A week before the wedding, Daniel confronts his friend and says, we're not learning together today. Until you tell me why you're not willing to be a witness at my daughter's wedding. Please, my best friend, our friends, our families have been friends forever. We've been so close. You mean so much to my daughter. You're like an uncle to her. Please be a witness at my daughter's wedding. And Steve says, Daniel, I'm so sorry, I can't. Daniel says, why not? Steve says, I have to tell you something. I have to come clean. I'm not really Jewish. Daniel says, what? What do you mean you're not Jewish? How can you not be Jewish? I'm not Jewish. But your kids, your wife, I'm like, my wife's Jewish. My kids are Jewish because my wife is Jewish. I'm not really Jewish. I found out not so long ago. I never really converted. I'm not Jewish. So Daniel says, I don't get it. I'm not Jewish, so I can't be a witness at your daughter's wedding. He says, okay, fine. Forget the wedding. This doesn't make any sense. How can you not be Jewish? We've gone on vacations together. We spent Shabbos together. He says, yeah, I know. He says, I've been with you for an entire Shabbos. I've seen you keep Shabbos. We learned together in Sanhedrin. You're not allowed to keep Shabbos. Goyim cannot keep Shabbos. A non-Jew that keeps Shabbos is Chayav Misa. And Steve says, Daniel, don't worry about that. It's fine. He says, why? What do you do? I break Shabbos every week. So Steve, what are you doing? How are you breaking Shabbos every week? So Steve tells Daniel, he says, every week when I go outside, I've got a key in my pocket. I'm carrying outside on Shabbos. You're not allowed to carry from inside to outside on Shabbos. So Daniel says, Steve, we have an Erev in the community. And Steve looks at Daniel and says, come on, Daniel, you think I hold the Erev? No, and hearing them laughing, but I'm sure everyone at home is laughing hysterically. So wonderful. But the notion that non-Jews are not keeping Shabbos and Jews are keeping Shabbos is highly significant here, because we've got a problem. Because if Yosef thinks that they're not Jewish and the brothers think they are Jewish, then it must have been a very awkward Friday night dinner. Was someone breaking Shabbos? Were they not breaking Shabbos? What was going on? This actually comes up these days. If you have a non-Jew, then they break Shabbos for sure. If you have a full Jew, they keep Shabbos. But what happens, Rachman al-Litzlan, if someone gets a bris milah, but in order to convert, they're circumcised, but they don't have a chance before Shabbos starts to go into the mikvah. So they're like a half and half. They're not fully Jewish, but they're kind of sort of are Jewish, kind of sort of not. And so this comes up, and the Bein Tzion, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, Echo the Rebbe of the great Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, says, what do you do in that case? So the advice that he gives is that this sort of kaka Jew, not Jew, should put on a pair of tzitzis and go into what we call Rishus HaRabim, into a public thoroughfare, carry from inside to super outside. And what happens if you do that? He says, well, if you're Jewish, because we're not sure if you're Jewish or not Jewish, then all you've done is walk from one place to another. You're wearing tzitzis. Tzitzis, even with the strings on them, is called a garment, because you've got a mitzvah to wear tzitzis. But if you're not Jewish, then that mitzvah isn't really a mitzvah. There's no mitzvah for non-Jews to wear tzitzis. And so what have you effectively done? You've carried from one domain to another domain on Shabbos. And now in that way, if you're not Jewish, you've broken Shabbos. What a gavaldika, what a very, very impressive halakhic solution to this conundrum from the BNC and from Yaakov Ettlinger. And Reese, the head of the CRC here in Chicago, says that this is actually something that they'll recommend if a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is accessible. There are a few other recommendations. If you're in the situation, I highly recommend that you reach out to your local, based in your local rabbinic court. So the B'nai Yisrael is explaining that what ended up happening, according to Yosef, according to the approach that our avos were actually not Jewish, that they're not B'nai Torah, they had to break Shabbos every week on a weekly basis in one way, shape, or form, one little way. It doesn't mean they didn't daven Kabbalah Shabbos. Doesn't mean they didn't have Trump, they didn't have a Suda, they weren't singing his Mirah, so they didn't take Shabbos naps. But they had to break Shabbos in some way because they might have been Jewish, might not have been Jewish. And then he says, I says to B'nai Yisachar, that ultimately Yosef gets sold down to Egypt and all the brothers follow him there. And Yosef is sort of running the show in Egypt. And he says, Yosef's in charge. Yosef's the big shot in Egypt. And so Yosef sort of set the stage. Yosef set the culture of what Judaism would look like in the land of Mitzrayim. So if that's the case, then all of Yosef's halachic positions seemingly would take effect. All of Yosef's halachic positions would matter. This is something that comes up not so frequently anymore, but used to when minhagim and different opinions were stronger and Yiddishkeit wasn't as uniform as it is today, which is a funny thing to think about given how non-uniform Yiddishkeit is. But for sure in the times of Chazal and in the Rishonim and really basically, I think like until the United States became this melting pot of different Jewish communities, that there was a machlokes that, so in that community, they hold one way, in that community, they hold the other way, and they do different things, and that's fine. And this came up with a lot of Hasidim, particularly Hungarian Jews, who held Rabbeinu Tam. They held that the timing of Rabbeinu Tam was the real halakhic time. And so it wasn't like, oh, they were super frum. So they started Shabbos at 7 o'clock with people who held like Rashi. And then later on, they waited an extra time to let Shabbos go out with Rabbeinu Tam. They held that Shabbos starts like Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam says that sunset is just later than the regular opinion. And so if that's the case, then what was happening was that you had Hasidim driving around on Friday night when it was dark out already, because according to Rabbeinu Tam, Shabbos had not yet started. And so there was a deal made, I believe Rav Moshe brokered a deal where basically he said, we need the Hasidim to stop driving around on Friday night. And we know that as far as you're concerned, you're not breaking Shabbos, but for the rest of us, all of our native United States Jews, it doesn't look so good. It doesn't feel so good. And so it became this thing that Hasidim, keep a longer Shabbos. But the practice was not that Hasidim kept longer Shabbos. Hasidim just followed the Shita, the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. And so while it existed that the Shvatim could say, we'll say Shita's Rabbeinu Tam, we're going to be of the opinion that the Jewish people, that our children are B'nai Torah and they can keep Shabbos and there's no issue. And the people of Yosef's Chevra would not be keeping Shabbos in its entirety. They would break Shabbos every week. However, once Yosef's in charge, once Yosef is running the show in Mitzrayim, then you can't disagree with Yosef. You've entered into Yosef's community, if you will. And so if Yosef is the community rabbi and Yosef has a halakhic position, you got to follow it. And so the entire Jewish people were following Yosef's guidelines, were following Yosef's rules. And so if all of the Jewish people are listening to Yosef, the entire time that the Jewish people are in Egypt, on a weekly basis, they were breaking Shabbos. In just a little bit, but they were breaking Shabbos every single week. They had to, because they might not have been Jewish. And so before we get to the next piece of the Bnei Yisrael, we're going to look at a Rambam. Rambam, in the Laws of Sales, explains that when a Jew wants to acquire from another Jew, there are two ways of making that acquisition. Either you pull it, you pull the object, or you give money. And if I give money to you, even if I have not touched the object, pulled or lifted, not a problem because I've given you money. And if you know, you and I decide that, okay, I'm going to give you $10 and I lift up the object and I take it, even though I've not yet given you the money, that's a good enough acquisition as well. This comes up halacha l'maisa in terms of buying chametz or not buying chametz on Pesach. And you know, there are a bunch of different ways in which we buy and sell chametz for mechiras chametz, basically because of this law of the different ways that you can acquire something. But he says, when it comes to acquiring animals from a Jew acquiring animals from a non-Jew or vice versa, we don't just say you can do one or the other. We say you need both. And why? So sociologically, for a long time, you needed things to be very, very explicit between parties who didn't necessarily always get along. So we wanted to be as clear as humanly possible that this sale took place. And so you need both of those things. And so you need both a physical taking. You need to lift it up or pull it, what we might call a kika, what we might call a mashika, which means to pull. And you need a monetary exchange. You need what we might call kach, kach, you know, take, you know, the transfer of money results in you taking it. And so anytime we see the word kach, it means money. Anytime we see the word moshech, mashika, it means to pull, it means to physically take it. And in order for a Jew to acquire something from a non-Jew, you need both. So now let's look at the pasuk that we quoted in the very beginning. Because the pasuk in the very, very beginning says, Vayikra Moshe l'cholzik nei Yisrael. And Moshe called out to the entirety of the Jewish people, to the elders of the Jewish people, Vayomer lehem, and told them basically to tell the rest of the Jewish people, Mishchu uchu, pull and take, lachem, for yourselves, son l'mishpechosam, l'shakatu ha-pesach. Now, what are we seeing here? We're seeing a double language. Mishchu, pull, uchu, and take. Meaning, you need to physically move the object and you need to provide for monetary compensation so that you can properly acquire this lamb, this sheep, for your offering of the Paschal lamb for the Korban Pesach on this, the 10th day of Nisan leading up to the departure from Egypt. And so, if that's the case, if Am Yisrael were needing to acquire something from a non-Jew, both using money and using a physical movement, then that has some serious ramifications. Because until now, the entirety of the Jewish people were breaking Shabbos because they thought, maybe we're Jewish, maybe we're not Jewish. Maybe we're B'nai Torah, maybe we're B'nai Noach. And now Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells B'nai Israel, on the 10th of Nisan, Mishku Ku. If you're going to acquire something from a non-Jew, then you need to do it in the way that that Jews acquire from non-Jews. You need to do it in a very, very clear way with a double acquisition, money and moving. But if B'nai Yisrael needs to acquire something with this double acquisition, what does that mean? It must mean that they are now Jewish. And if B'nai Yisrael are now Jewish and they need this double acquisition, then something very, very exciting is about to happen. You need to make this double acquisition. And along the lines of that double acquisition, it implies that you are now Jewish. And I've repeated myself enough so I can finally get to the point that everyone will be clear. For the past 210 years, the Jewish people have been living in a doubt whether or not they're Jewish or not, whether they can keep Shabbos in its entirety or whether they have to break Shabbos a little bit each and every week. And so Shabbos has not been kept for almost for over two centuries. And now the entire Jewish people, not just a family of 70, not just Yaakov, Avram, Sarah, not just our Avos and Imahos, but the entire Jewish people, 600,000 men, between 2 and 3 million people who have been breaking Shabbos on a weekly basis for the past two centuries, for the first time are being told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now you have mitzvos, now you have a miniature version of Mamre Har Sinai, now you are Jewish. And because you are now Jewish, you can finally keep Shabbos. Looking at our source sheet, we're going to read the B'nai Saskar inside. We're going to say in the end of the fifth line, Arkakaka, therefore, Lomar, Deshuv, Ein Lahem Din B'nai Noach, V'dinam Ki Yisrael Mamish. They were no longer B'nai Noach, they were full-fledged Jews, full-fledged B'nai Torah. V'kevan Sheyatzu Michlal B'nai Noach, Hayu Rashayin Lishmur V'lishbos Es Kol Yom HaShabbos Kimitzvaso. They were finally able to keep Shabbos. Deshuv, Lo Hayu Tzurikin La'asos Eze Malacha B'shum Shah Me'esu Asai Hayom. And they didn't have to break Shabbos, you know, little malacha here or there. Lo haya kayoma Shabbos azeh, Shabbos gadol lefanam. And there was not such a great Shabbos as ever in history. Ki ad ata lo haya lahem b'efshari lishbos kol chavtal Shabbos. Until now, they were not able to keep all 24, really 25 hours of Shabbos. Mimela ra'oi b'nachon likros lo Shabbos azeh, Shabbos agadol, havin davar uptita deraisa tavin. And now we can appreciate, why is this called Shabbos Gadol? Because this is the first time the Jewish people were ever able to keep Shabbos. This was the biggest Shabbos that ever took place because it was the first Shabbos that ever took place. That was exciting for me. I hope it was exciting for you. We'll just wrap up. We know, based on the Gemara and Yuma and the Midrashim, that the Avos kept the Torah. But it was unclear to us and unclear to them if they kept the Torah because they wanted to, but really they were fundamentally not Jews, or maybe they, by accepting upon themselves the Torah to the best of their ability when they were not able to stand at Har Sinai, they became Jews, full-fledged B'nai Torah. And the significant difference between those two things is not just the Ivri Menachai thing and the cause of fighting between Yosef and his brothers, but whether or not they could keep Shabbos. And if they are fully-fledged Jews, then they can keep Shabbos. But as far as Yosef, and therefore anyone living in Mitzrayim is concerned, they're not able to keep Shabbos. They had to break Shabbos a little bit every week, like any of our friends who are converting. And so finally, on this Shabbos, the 10th of Nisan, what we call Shabbos HaGadol, they became full-fledged Jews. God and Moshe Rabbeinu told B'nai Yisrael, you are now Jews, you are now B'nai Torah, you can now keep Shabbos. And so for the very, very first time, all of Am Yisrael kept the Shabbos. We learned today about Jews who wanted to keep Shabbos but weren't able to. And we might be in a situation where there are a lot of things that we don't want to do or can't, or that we want to do but can't do. We're stuck at home. I'm giving shiur from my dining room. And thank God I get to show off my svarim, but it's not quite the same as learning this together in person. And so we might not want to be here, but let's think about the alternative. You know, I saw a meme a while ago. This was sort of in the beginning of this whole little episode. That your grandparents were called to war, you were called to sit on your couch. You can do this. And while in some ways actually going to war is not easier, but it feels better. You know, you're going and doing something as opposed to here where we're supposed to sit back and do nothing. To some extent, it's almost like we're told to keep Shabbos every day. We're supposed to sit back and not try and explore, not try and accomplish. The Maharal and others explain that Shabbos at its core is about being present, about being there. It's about not trying to accomplish more, but about being happy with where you are. For so many of us, the inability to go out means an inability to do all the things that we want to do, to accomplish. And so what we're forced to do is to just sort of be. And it's very hard for a lot of us. But I wonder if particularly this Shabbos HaGadol, the first time that our ancestors were able to actually keep Shabbos, we can appreciate the very least on Shabbos, if not during this whole little time period that we're in, that maybe it's okay that we're just resting, that we're home, that we're just being with our families. We're engaging in the things that we can do and not doing everything possible. Maybe we can really appreciate Shabbos differently now than we have before. And the last thing I'll leave you with is something that happened to me a few years ago. I was at an NCSY staff training Shabbaton, talking to a friend of mine a very, very special Jew named Simcha Brick. Rabbi Simcha Brick and I were talking, and I came to find out that he's actually a convert. And it didn't make sense because I knew that he went to Jewish schools growing up, and he explained that for one reason or another, there were bad conversions throughout at some point, and he found out when he was in toward the end of high school that he wasn't Jewish. And so his story is for another time. It's his story to tell, but he went off to Israel before converting and learned about what it means to be Jewish and then decided to convert. And now, thank God, he's learning and teaching Torah in Yerushalayim. But we spent the whole weekend asking all of our NCSY staff members, if you found out you weren't Jewish, what would you do? You do this, you do that. And the answers that people provide don't really matter. But the question that I think I want to leave with you is that if you found out you weren't Jewish tomorrow morning, what would you do? What would your life look like? Would you do things differently? Would you choose to be Jewish again? This holiday of Pesach that we're jumping into, that we're celebrating, is really a celebration of the fact that we're Jewish. It's a celebration of the fact that we get to keep Shabbos, that we get to learn Torah, that we get to keep Torah, that we get to eat matzah and mar for a full 8 days or 7 days. And so the question that I think I'm going to leave with you tonight is, if you found out you weren't Jewish, if you found out that you were Ben Noach, what would you do? Chag Kosher V'Sameach, have a Shabbat Shalom. It's already Wednesday, and we're already saying L'chun Aranana. Thank you so much for learning together. Have a good night.